My special guest for today's episode of the Michael Yardley podcast is Robert Kiyosaki, of rich dad, poor dad fame. Now, I know Robert's views have changed how many people think about money and finance, and I realise the major financial shock our current coronavirus pandemic has created has revealed how many Australian families don't understand the long-lasting impact of the financial decisions that they're making today. Now, I spoke with Robert on my podcast last year, at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, and at that time he warned about the challenges for our economy ahead and also the opportunities that he felt would come on the other side of that big downturn he was predicting. Now, I didn't agree with everything he said, but I respect that he's taught not only me, but millions and millions of people about the basics of financial literacy, so I was keen to hear his opinions. Fortunately, Robert's dire predictions didn't come to pass, so I was pleased when he reached out to me again recently to be on my podcast so I could ask him what the biggest surprise was for him over the last 12 months. Now, you'll hear how Robert's teachings challenged conventional thinking about money and how he suggests we should be doing what 99% of people aren't doing. So you'll enjoy when we talk about his basic financial concepts before we get into the deeper topics like what's ahead for our economy, why he thinks we're going to go into a recession, how deep the recession is going to be, but also the great opportunities that are going to be there ahead once we get through the downturn that he believes is going to happen. Now, you're also going to hear how Robert speaks positively about Australia's opportunity, but you may be shocked by some of his predictions of what will happen before these opportunities arise. Now, as I said, I don't agree with all of Robert's thoughts. His ideas about real estate and his forecasts about what's ahead for the economy, I don't agree with all those either. But rather than debating him, I gave him the airtime he deserves, and then after our chat, I'm going to share with you my views. So don't panic if you hear some of Robert's extreme thoughts, but please listen to the whole show, including my thoughts, and then you'll have both sides of the discussion to make your own decisions. I'm sure you're going to enjoy today's show, so welcome to this episode of the Michael Yardley Podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardley Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
For years, Robert Kiyosaki's been one of the most respected voices in the world on growing wealth. He's the best-known author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it's become the number one personal finance book of all time. But Robert's also challenged the way tens of millions of people around the world think about money. Now, I've got a number of Robert's books on my bookshelf, including the one he co-authored with Donald Trump, or prior to him becoming president, and I regularly listen to his Rich Dad radio show podcast with his wife, Kim. So I'm pleased Robert's going to be on this podcast once again to discuss his views on what's ahead. So welcome to the Michael Yardley Podcast, Robert.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I'll say Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Yes, I know you're an old fan of Australia. You're not new to Australia. You came many, many years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I first came to went to Australia in 1972 to play rugby union. Needless to say, we lost every game. But I fell in love with the people, the spirit, you know, and you really are the lucky country.
So, Robert, there's millions of people who have read your books. A lot have learned your financial concepts. But I know there's a whole new generation of investors listening to this podcast, watching this video, who are not familiar with you. So let's start with, who are you? Who's Robert Kiyosaki? And why should we even listen to you?
Well, the story of Robert Kiyosaki starts with Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You know, my poor dad was a PhD. He went to Stanford, University of Chicago, Northwestern. But I was told in PhD stood for poor, helpless, and desperate, because really, we learned nothing about money at school. And my poor dad, although a PhD, knew nothing about money. So when I was about 9 or 10, I raised my hand in school and asked the teacher, I said, you know, when are we going to learn about money? And the teacher said, she gave me I thought I was back in Sunday school or something. She says, the love of money is the root of all evil. And I say, maybe evil to you, but I like to have some. And the reason was, was because I went to a school with a bunch of rich white kids, and I was one of the Asian kids. And it was kind of interesting because right across the street were the kids that came to Hawaii to work on the sugar plantations. And just my father didn't cheat or anything. I just happened to live in the zoning that sent me to the rich white kids school. And that's when I could see the difference there. So I'm not being right or black and all this other stuff. It was just that the education is different. That was where I learned.
So you had rich experiences from your rich dad. And I know in your book, you talk about how the rich think differently to the poor. Now, last year we chatted, it was in May 2020. It was just the beginning of the coronavirus. Its effects were starting to make its way felt around the world. And at that time, you thought we're in for the worst economic downturn in almost a century. What surprised you most about what's happened over the last 12 months, Robert?
Well, what surprises me is how desperate the United States is right now, because if the government spends $100, 60 of it is printed. 60 of it is fake money. So the U.S. is now dumping money straight into the economy, whereas before it used to go through the banking system. Today it's going straight into the economy. And that means the United States is pretty desperate, but it creates a sugar high. You know, everybody's happy, America's rich and all this. You know, that's what Zimbabwe did. And that's what Venezuela did. And that's what Germany did during the Weimar Republic. So history is repeating itself, except history proves we don't learn from history.
Yes, it's true. Robert, before we get on to the economy, if I'm not mistaken, real estate's your preferred investment vehicle. And that's what a lot of people watching this and listening to this podcast are interested in as well. Is that right? Is that what you enjoy investing in?
Well, I always say invest in your financial education. You have to invest in what you're interested in. So if you like shares, then study shares. If you like options, study options. But I like real estate for two reasons. Number one is debt. I can use all the debt I want to buy real estate. And the more debt I use, the less tax I pay. So, Donald Trump, and I know he's hated in many places, but he and I are good friends because we make millions of dollars and don't pay taxes legally. And people in Aussie do the same thing.
Yep.
It just depends upon your education and your proclivity, what you want to invest in. Most people should just stay in shares. Yeah, you should just stay in your supers.
So real estate is different in different countries. The underlying fundamentals are different in the US. The tax benefits are different. Are your concepts relevant to Australians? Should they be listening to you?
I've made millions in Aussie. They're the same. I own property in Bondi, Randwick, and Rushcutters Bay.
Lovely location. Clearly, you're a good investor. You know the best locations in Australia. Now, you've written many books. Let's summarize your investment philosophy for somebody who may be watching this, who hasn't had the opportunity so far to read them. What is the basis of your investment philosophy?
Well, I don't trust the government. And most of the houses I know don't trust your government either.
Well, it's become a very interesting time here with our various state governments. You're right. So your philosophy is to educate yourself. And I think that's one of the major things you've done for a long time. One of the concepts I learned in, I've got audiobooks, I've learned from them, I've enjoyed them, was the cash flow quadrant. Maybe we could just quickly walk through this because it's important to understand where you fit in the game, isn't it?
Well, the quadrant is very simply four different people that make up the world of money. E stands for employee. S stands for self-employed or small business, like a doctor or a lawyer or a chip shop owner or a meat pie owner. And B stands for big business, but B really stands for a brand, like brand. And I stands for insider. So I always invest from the I quadrant as an insider into brands. And Warren Buffett invests in brands like Gillette, Coca-Cola, things like that. Unfortunately, most people go to the E and the S side, and the taxes are highest for employees and small business. In Aussie, your self-employed pay about 60% in tax. Employees pay 40%.
Okay. So people think it's secure on that side of the quadrant, though, don't they?
Well, it's all relative. I was a Marine pilot. I just love Aussie. But the first time I went there was to Perth. And I always said to people there, the higher the risk, the smarter you've got to be.
Yep.
When I went to flight school, the 2 years before I went to Vietnam, I knew the risk was going up because I was going into Vietnam and we had to study harder. So the mistake I made from the average punter out there is say, well, give me a low risk investment. Well, there's no such thing in the first place. Everything has risk. But what that says to me about the persons that don't want to study. So I'll just say it again. As I prepared to go into Vietnam, I had to fly farther, harder, faster, study more and all this. And that stayed with me. It's the discipline of the U.S. military. And the reason I'm successful today is not that there's no risk. It's I am disciplined enough. I was a U.S. Marine to study more. It's the same as, let me give it this way. When we went to Aussie to play rugby union, we didn't practice enough. You guys kicked our butts.
You were young then, though. Things were different.
No, but it was the spirit of the game. And all it did was inspire me that I wanted to come back to Aussie, first of all. But we came away from Aussie better players. That makes sense.
Robert, one of the things I initially said was that you often question traditional thinking about money and finance. And I know one of the things that you say differently to many is that your home isn't an asset. Why do you say that?
Well, you have to be able to read financial statements. You know, very simply, my rich dad said, assets put money in your pocket, whether you work or not. You look at my book, Rich Dad Poor Dad. By the way, I flunked out of school because I can't write. So it's ironic I'm a best-selling author. But every month, it puts millions of dollars in my pocket. I'm a brand because that B stands for brand, big business and brand. So my books are sold all over the world. That's not a mistake. I'm an entrepreneur and a capitalist. So the money flows in every month. I also have 8,000 rental units. So every month, they send millions of dollars a month into my pocket. Whereas my house, which I'm sitting in right now, is sucking cash out of my pocket. So assets put money in your pockets and liabilities take money from your pockets. So what really kind of wipes out people is they call liabilities, like their house and their four kids, assets. They're liabilities.
Interesting way of thinking about it.
They're expensive liabilities.
Yes, they are. Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room. I believe you're suggesting the world's biggest financial crash is coming. Is that right?
Correct.
Why do you think that's
going to
happen, Robert?
That's what Harry and I are coming to town to talk about. Well, Harry and I are on the same team as that. The United States is destroying the U.S. dollar. And in 1944, the U.S. dollar became the reserve currency of the world. So basically, in 1944, the U.S. government or the U.S. Treasury promised the world the dollar would be backed by gold. And they broke that in 1971, so now they can print as much as they want. So America broke its promise to the world because they promised the U.S. dollar would be as good as gold, but today it isn't. So I'll say it again. Today, as we speak, this is July 2021, every dollar printed by the or spent by the U.S. government, 60% is fake. 60% are fake dollars. So it puts America into a bubble. Everybody feels happy. China ships to us. Aussie ships to us. You know, everybody's happy as Larry, except they're drunk as skunks, you know, on fake money.
So why do you think it's a bubble? How do you know for sure it's a bubble? People are happy. It's all going well.
Well, it's because in 2008, it bust. Was a thing called, I won't get into it, it's called a repo market.
Yeah.
It's called the repurchase market. So there was a bubble in 2008, which led to the subprime real estate crash. So instead of fixing the problem, the United States, I'm not blaming Aussie, the United States just kept printing more money. So by 2016, it was going really, really high. And my friend Donald Trump printed even more. And now Biden is printing even more. And here we are in 2021. It is the biggest bubble ever blown in world history. So Harry Dent and I talk about that, but we also talk, how do you prepare yourself for what's going to come? I think that's the most important thing because you and I are not going to stop it.
No.
But it's coming.
Can't it just deflate slowly, Robert? Does it really have to burst?
I mean, I wish it could, but I don't think so. I think we're on the eve of destruction. This has happened before in history. And it happens around every 80 years or something like that. And we're on it right now.
Well, so you've mentioned about a bubble before in your books. You've written about it in your seminars. You've talked about it. What's finally going to prick the bubble? What's going to make it burst this time around?
Well, I think was that saying? Comes up slowly and then happens suddenly. My friend Jim Records, who's also been to Aussie, he says it's like this avalanche, you know, and the snow keeps piling up. And it's going to take one snowflake. The trouble is we don't know which snowflake. And, you know, when it comes down, it comes down. And it's going to come down so fast. So Harry and I are going to be talking about what you do to prepare for that last snowflake.
I'll mention that link right now, but we'll leave it in the show notes, robertandharry.com, because you're going to spend time with Harry Dent and yourself explaining what's going on. But how bad do you think things are going to get?
I bought more guns.
No, you live in the USA. We can't do that in Australia.
I know. It's terrible they took your guns away.
What's going to happen in Australia then? Are we safe here? We've got different rules. Our economy's doing well. Employment's going up. House prices are going up. Now, I know they are around the world. Are we isolated here? Are we insulated from all this?
Correct. And there's good and bad to that whole thing, you know. But Aussie is really a rich country. Unfortunately, you kind of copy the U.S. and you're dependent upon China.
Mm.
But China and America may go to war pretty soon, you know, over Taiwan.
Yes.
And that's the worst case scenario. So, if, you know, I wouldn't be complacent. That's all I'm saying. Right now, it's not time to be saying she'll be right me.
You know, all the Australian sayings, don't you, Robert? So what's going to happen to Australian house prices?
I don't know. It's really hard to tell. You know, if they print excessively, which they might, you go to hyperinflation, then the prices will go up. But if it goes to a hyperdeflation, which is called a depression, will come down. So that's why the good thing about Harry and I, his solutions are different than my solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I think my solutions are more geared to Aussie. Harry and I get into we agree on what the problem is. We disagree on the solution. So that's why people should listen to Robert and Harry, and you can choose for yourself. The reason I love Aussie is because I'm a gold guy. And, you know, Aussie is very, very rich in gold and resources. So you're a good country. But Harry says gold is going to crash too, which disturbs me. But sure. I don't really care what he thinks. I'm still going to buy more gold, and I'm still going to buy more silver. You know, your Perth Mint, one of my favorite places.
You've got your own private room there, have you? Yeah. What about Bitcoin? That seems to be the flavor of the month at present, Robert.
I don't know much about Bitcoin. I just know I started buying it at 9,000 US. So I'm still in the money. I stopped buying also, I bought about 60 coins, so I'm still in the money. Does that make sense to you? So a lot of times with investing, it's often when you buy. And unfortunately, what people do, as you know, they wait for the top of the market to buy, and then it crashes them. So I'm not recommending Bitcoin, but the reason I like Bitcoin is because it's decentralized. The federal bank, the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank, is centralized. The Reserve Bank of Australia is centralized. Centralized is Marxist, communist. It was Lenin who says centralized banking is essential to communism. And so the Fed is a communist organization. So I like Bitcoin because it's decentralized. I like gold and silver because they're decentralized. Harry likes treasuries, but his reasons are different than mine. So come and listen to what we say. Decide for yourself.
So if gold and silver are a choice of yours to retain your assets, but they don't bring in cash flow, how does that sit with what you said a while ago, that assets have to bring in cash flow?
I make about $4 million a month in income from real estate. I don't spend that much money a month.
Even you can't spend that much.
No. And my books bring in another million a month. Mm. So I have assets. I have real assets. Gold, silver, and Bitcoin are like my savings.
Makes sense.
And I've never spent a gold coin, a silver coin, or Bitcoin. But that's why I save my money. That's why I said savers or losers if they're saving Aussie dollars, yuan, or Aussie.
Okay, well, you're coming to Australia real soon. Without giving too much away before the live event, can you outline, at least at a high level, what opportunities you think will be available once the downturn occurs? Because there will be good times again. After every clean out, there's a new opportunity.
Well, let me ask this question to all Aussies, okay? If David Jones raised our prices 500%, would you go shopping?
No.
No. But if David Jones says everything is 90% off, everybody goes shopping.
Exactly right.
So I'm waiting for the crash. When the crash comes, I'll be back in Aussie buying some Bondi Beach property.
So what should we do in the meantime? Should we sell up our assets, Robert?
Well, that's why you should come to listen to Harry and I, because our solutions are different. You know, if you're a stock guy, it's going to be a great time if you know how to short the markets coming down. I don't know how to do that. All I know is that I like to buy low and stay low and then wait for the markets to crash. I'm very excited. I'm sexually stimulated thinking about this crash.
Well, I really appreciate your time, Robert, because I think it's important to not go forward with blinkers on, to listen to various opinions, especially for people who've got a track record, as you and Harry clearly have. And look, while we don't fully agree, I appreciate the time you've spent with us. So therefore, if others want to understand and get a different view, and it's free, it doesn't cost anything, so why not spend the time and have a listen to Robert Kiyosaki? Go to robertandharry.com. And I look forward to catching up with you probably again in a year's time like we've done and see what of these predictions have come true. Thank you so much for your time, Robert.
Thank you. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Aye, aye, aye.
Aye, aye, aye. Thank you.
Well, I told you some of Robert's views would be extreme, and he didn't let you down, did he? Now, I'd like to give you an alternative view on two of Robert's assertions. First of all, what's in store for our economy, and secondly, his concepts of what makes a good investment. But property investment. So let's first talk about property. Now, Robert's an ardent property investor. In fact, in last year's podcast, he told us how he owns 3 homes and 8,000 rental properties. So clearly, he knows a bit about real estate. Well, what I should say is clearly he knows a bit about United States real estate, where the rules are very different. The tax regime is very different. The markets are very different. And the way to invest is very different. In fact, if I think about it, the way I'd invest in real estate in other countries, even New Zealand, which is very similar to Australia in many ways, I'd invest very differently in New Zealand than I would in Australia, even though our countries and our economies are more similar than Australia and New Zealand. Anyway, in the past, I've explained why Australian real estate is very different to overseas. But unfortunately, many overseas gurus just don't get it. Our property markets are underpinned by the fact that the 10.6 million properties around Australia are in general owned by homeowners. In fact, 70% are owned by homeowners, and half of these homeowners don't even have a mortgage against their property. And for the other half, those who do have a mortgage, many of them are well ahead of their mortgage payments, and others are actually having significant debt against the home, but they're using the mortgage to support the purchase of other properties, investment properties. So for the property markets to crash, for property values to crash in Australia, as many overseas gurus keep suggesting is going to happen, we need to be in the position that people must sell their home, have to sell their home at any price, virtually any price, and there won't be anyone there to buy them, so the market values crash. Now, over the last year, despite COVID-related lockdowns and the first technical recession we've had in many decades, and in fact the biggest drop in GDP that we've had in almost a century, our property markets showed their resilience, didn't they? And by the way, there's no real debt problem in Australia. According to CoreLogic, our property markets are worth a total of $8.6 trillion. But there's only about $1.9 trillion of outstanding mortgage. Now, I say only about $1.9 trillion, but when you put it as a percentage against all those properties in Australia, the loan-to-value ratio of our property markets is in the order of, wait for it, 22%. There's no housing debt bubble here, is there? And in general, the debt is in the hands of those who can best afford it. Sure, there's some first homeowners who've overcommitted themselves, and yes, there's some investors who borrowed against the wrong properties. but there's no debt problem in Australian property. Now, the other argument I would have with Robert is that he suggests that your home is not an asset. And his argument for that is that there's no income coming in, only expenses going out, and therefore your home is not an asset, but a liability. Now, if you accept his definition of an asset, something that brings cash flow in, well, then he's correct. But the common definition of an asset has nothing to do with cash flow. In fact, Robert Kiyosaki invests in gold and silver. He says so. Well, that suggests he believes they're an asset. However, they don't bring in cash, do they? Look, I believe if I had $1 million in my bank account, that would be an asset, even though it would hardly bring any cash into my pocket. And I also believe that if I took it out of the bank and put it under my mattress, that $1 million would still remain an asset, even though it had no cash flow. So I believe Robert's basic assumption that your home is not an asset is flawed. How I see it is you get income from properties in four ways, not just cash flow. Sure, you get rental returns, but it's an asset because you get capital growth. It's an asset because, as I said, you get income from your property in four ways, tax benefits, and also through accelerated manufactured capital growth. And of course, inflation helps increase the value of your asset as well. Now, unfortunately, too many people look for cash flow from their residential real estate investments in Australia. And that's not how it works. Now, it's very different overseas, very different in America, where the tax rules are different. But in Australia, Australian residential real estate is generally a high growth, relatively low yield investment. And to try and make it something different just bastardizes what it is. And the results won't ever allow you to build a substantial asset base to give you a cash machine in the future. So I respectfully disagree with Robert Kiyosaki's thoughts that your home is not an asset. Okay, what about his views on the economy? Well, when I spoke to Robert last year, he was concerned Australia would fall into recession as most countries would around the world. Now, those predictions made in May at the beginning of the pandemic, I can understand why people thought that. But of course, he said he'd predicted this for other reasons. The pandemic was just a side effect. Now, that prediction came true, but the recessions we had weren't as deep or as disastrous as he expected because our governments have learned. They learned they can buy their way out of a recession by spending money. Last year, we saw a combination of monetary and fiscal policy cause an economic rebound that nobody would have expected. And today, more Australians are employed than prior to the pandemic, and there are still more full-time jobs available for the taking for anyone who wants them. Now, there's no doubt we're going to have challenges due to coronavirus. It's going to keep creating economic headwinds. But while Robert is an innovative thinker and an expert in personal finance, he's not an economist. Now, while I've been a student of economics for almost 50 years, I'm not a qualified economist either. But there are some very astute economists employed by the Reserve Bank, by our government, by the International Monetary Fund, and by our local banks, and they all see a very different future ahead, and nowhere near as negative as some of the headline-grabbing naysayers are suggesting is going to happen to us. Australia's performed better than most advanced economies. Now, of course, we're still susceptible to coronavirus-induced problems. I'm not even going to start talking about the geopolitical problems in China, but I see a number of reasons to be optimistic about our economic future. So I'd like to explain those to you. First of all, it's not just Australia. Global economic growth is recovering rapidly, and that's been driven in part by vaccines enabling the reopening of borders. It's been driven by pent-up demand. And just like in Australia, the monetary and fiscal stimulus by governments around the world have made economies around the world pick up strongly. This is driving strong growth and demand for Australia's exports, which are showing up with our high commodity prices. So the global economy is helping Australia's economy, which is doing nicely, thank you. At the same time, Australian consumers are going to keep helping our economy keep moving because they're going to keep spending. We've stashed our cash. Interestingly, there are bank deposits of over $100 billion sitting in the bank waiting to be spent now that wouldn't have been there in the absence of the pandemic. We've been stashing our cash, being cautious, and now we're starting to slowly spend it. Currently, there's also a high level of consumer confidence. people are feeling comfortable about their jobs, about their financial future, and they're experiencing the positive benefits of the wealth effect from the rise in the value of their home, from rising share prices and ultra-low interest rates. So Australian consumers are feeling confident and they're spending. By the way, Australian businesses are starting to feel more confident as well, and they're employing people and they're spending more. That's all going to help boost our economy. But the government isn't going to stop spending on us. Fiscal stimulus will continue. Australia successfully negotiated those so-called fiscal cliffs and the wind down of JobKeeper and the other support packages. The fiscal stimulus is still going to continue on, though. Our federal and state governments and the Reserve Bank are going to do everything they can to ensure our economic recovery. They're not going to waste all that time and that money and the effort that they put in last year and earlier this year just to let things falter. So the other element that's going to help our economy, of course, is monetary policy. In other words, interest rates are going to remain low. The Reserve Bank, sure, it's going to slowly cut its quantitative easing moving forward, but official interest rates are likely to remain around zero for the next 3 years or so. And moving forward, our borders are eventually going to open, and there's going to be a flood of migrants coming to Australia. And we're clearly going to choose skilled migrants who are going to be bringing money into the country, and this will support our property markets and our economy. So while I respect Robert Kiyosaki, and I believe he's done a great job of making people aware of the importance of understanding how money works, I still disagree with some of his thoughts. Now, don't get me wrong. I think the subject of financial literacy that he was teaching for many years is very important. For years, I've been trying to educate as many people as possible about property investment, personal finance, the psychology of success, and even a little bit about economics. But I've been concerned that Robert Kiyosaki scared off many investors and led others astray with his various prophecies of Armageddon. In 2002, he brought out his book, Rich Dad's Prophecy, where he warned the biggest stock market crash in history is coming. And since then, he's forecast 10 of the last two stock market downturns. Of course, I understand nobody's perfect, especially when it comes to market forecasting. But in my interview with Robert, I found there was no real substance behind the reasons why he felt the market would crash further and why would experience a Great Depression, other than a bunch of conspiracy theories. But my biggest concern is that he's misled many Australian property investors who try to use his real estate investment strategies that may work well overseas. In fact, obviously do. He's a very successful investor, but don't work here in Australia. You see, as I've said, Australian residential real estate is a high growth, relatively low yield investment. And I believe that your home is an asset, like I've already mentioned, but more than that, it's the stepping stone for a lot of people to build future assets and invest more in real estate. In this new age of property investment, when interest rates are accommodatingly low, mortgages are cheap, a lot of present-day homeowners are sitting on an asset. They're actually sitting on a potential gold mine. Far from being a drain on household coffers, many of us are taking the opportunity to reduce our mortgages faster, contributing extra to the continually shrinking repayments. That's what a lot of Australians did over COVID when they were a bit more concerned. So many Australians are well ahead in their mortgage payment. And in turn, many of these property owners are building up the equity at a considerable rate with the help of the appreciation of the property and decreasing of their mortgages. Think about it for a moment. Your home is an asset with zero tax liability if you choose to sell it. But better than that, it could represent the leaping off point to hasten your climb up the property ladder. Why not use the equity you've got in your home that you're literally sitting on or in to invest in more high growth assets? And that's what Australians are doing. They're cashing in on the opportunities this current property market is bringing. Now, be careful. You can't just buy any property. And if you're interested in taking advantage of our property markets at the moment, I believe you need holistic advice. So you do need financial advice. You need more than a mortgage broker. You need more than a buyer's agent. You need more than a simple property strategist to take advantage of this current property boom, which is a once in a generational boom. I believe you're going to get benefit from having a chat with my team at Metropole, who start off by putting a plan together for you. It all starts by planning your future, planning for you to become the person you plan to become, and then telling you what you need to do to achieve those plans. If you're already a property investor, to see if what you're doing is going to help you get to the goals that you want to in the time frames you want to. So why not go to metropole.com.au, find out about our range of services, and I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. As I said, it starts by putting a plan together for you, and then you may choose to use our buyer's agents, our property management, renovations, wealth advisory, or financial planning services. Go to metropole.com.au, find out more about what we do, and as I said, I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. I hope you got some benefit from this podcast. And I've got a way of giving you some more financial information. If you just go to podcastbonus.com.au, I'll leave a link in the show notes, but podcastbonus.com.au, you can get a bundle of ebooks and reports to help you become more financially fluent. Of course, if you did get some benefit, why not share the experience with others? Tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast or leave us a review. Now, I'm back twice a week. If you don't subscribe to this podcast, please do so. Of course, it's free, but you'll get me twice a week. And in between those sessions, you can follow me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney or in my private Facebook group where every day I leave some tips, some charts, some notes. Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update Facebook group. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?